Episode 415, Dune, Part 2.
Hooray! How's it going, Ben?
Hey, how you doing?
What is this, 1996?
How you doing? Have you seen that meme?
Yes, I have. How you? Yeah.
I just keep expecting them to do one for part two where it's just slightly different pictures.
Are you doing two?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, hey, this is a follow-up to our December 9th, 2021 episode where we talked about Dune Part 1, episode 376 of nice. Strangers and Aliens. And yeah. This, man, we've got to talk about this movie as soon as this thing was done. Credits were rolling. I couldn't wait to talk about it with you. You had a chance to see it pretty soon, though. Like you almost got to see it opening night, right?
I did. Yes.
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah. I think we saw it on Friday. So not quite opening.
Okay. I was afraid I was going to have to wait until today. Because, oh, really? Yeah, because we had our revival services at our church, and they are Sunday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday night. And then I also had a basketball program last Saturday, and so I didn't want to stay up late on Friday, but I had to work on Friday afternoon, and the showings last Thursday just did not fit into our schedule. And I was speaking at a chapel at a local Christian school on Friday morning. That was another reason why I didn't want to stay up late. So
busy.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I did do was I squeezed it in, after services on Sunday. Nice. 'Cause we do that an hour early. We were done by 7. I was out of the building by 8:30. I was in the theater at 9 with a handful of other people, not many. But it's, you know, Sunday night, 9 o'clock. And yeah, man, I can't wait to talk about this movie with you.
Well, I'm extremely happy that you saw this one in the theater because you saw the last one for the first time on your phone.
And that was my iPad.
Yeah, I mean, and we can talk about the theater experiences, but my theater experience in the first Dune, like when they're bombing the ships, the whole theater is just rattling, like, and it was huge screen. And so it was like, it's like you're there.
Well, but I was wearing headphones, like not just my earbuds, but I think I was actually wearing these headphones I'm wearing right now. And
vibrate your body.
No, but the sound was high quality.
Okay.
And I knew it needed to be because I'd listened to the soundtrack before the movie came out. And did the same thing actually for part two here, but I knew it had to be. I knew that, there's going to be a fantastic, bombastic score happening while the movie is going. And I'm so glad I did because there's whispers, you know, and the volume goes down and up and it's all over the place. And yeah, yeah. But for part two here, Evan, I did feel my body actually move during some of those moments. And sometimes because of what was happening on the screen and sometimes because the music was very, very loud and what's happening on the screen did not necessarily warrant shaking, but I was still shaking because, you know, Paul looked at the screen and you know, if he's going to look at you,
yep.
It's just going to happen. The throat singing is going to happen. Did you rewatch part one before part two?
Yes, because Shantae didn't remember much about it. So we watched it like, I think, a week before.
Yeah, that I managed to watch in a couple days. And that I watched on my big screen TV in my living room. Still not the bombastic chest cavity shaking sound, but a better visual experience than my iPad. So
very good.
Yeah. You know, you got to do what you got to do. I really wanted to get into the theater for the first one when they put it back out, but I think it only went out in IMAX.
Oh,
or at least that's the only thing that was in the area here for part one. And I'm like, do I drive an hour and pay $20 or do I just watch it in my living room for free or for my monthly subscription anyway? So I voted for that.
Nice. But,
all right, everyone, here is what we are going to do. This is our typical movie review format. We are going to be talking about it spoiler free right now. We're going to talk about our theater experience, which we've already touched on that a little bit. We'll talk about, I think we'll talk about, you know, the plot, the characters and things like that in general terms, and if we recommend it or not. And then we will play the spoiler organ. And depending on how I end up, how lazy I end up being in putting this episode together, it might be the actual spoiler organ, or it might be a reasonable facsimile, similar to the one from the Madam Web episode. But
reasonable facsimile.
Whichever way, you will know before we move into spoilers. And then we will we'll dive in a little bit deeper. And yeah. So.
All right,
Evan, let's start with the actual theater experience. I talked about mine, and that was pretty much all I needed to say. I went to the theater. There were just very few people in there, but I was so glad I did, just to see it on the big screen and have the sound system actually giving the sound that the movie is demanding, which unfortunately some theaters just don't have good sound. And I don't know if it's because things are breaking down and they just don't get around to fixing it. My local theater here in town, I totally get it there. I mean, it's a small theater. It's a storefront theater. Actually, both of my close theaters that are in my town and the town next town over, I get it, you know, and as long as I can understand the dialogue and know what's going on, I don't have to have my chest shaking. But they did pump it up for Top Gun, though. I was glad they did that.
Nice.
But I feel like the chain theaters, there's really no excuse for it. But dude, the AMC in town that you and I used to go to, the bathroom still has that one urinal just covered with a plastic bag. Like, they still have not fixed it, Evan.
I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Yeah, no, it's still broken.
I've been here for 2 years.
What?
And I've been in Colorado for 2 years.
I know. And it was broken for a while before you left.
Yeah.
So I don't get what's going on there, why they won't fix it. They have fixed the air conditioning. I've never been in, what was it, Spider-Man?
Yeah, Into the Spider-Verse.
Far From Home, or
it was one of them.
One of those Spider-Man movies a long while ago, and it just was so hot in there. Yes. I think it was the first one. I think it was Homecoming.
I think you're right.
And terrible, terrible. But they have fixed that, but yeah. No, that urinal still has just a bag over it. A garbage bag. Probably the same garbage bag. Anyway, yeah. So the sound was good. It shook. And I mean, that Hans Zimmer score, this is something we can talk about without any kind of spoiler warning. It's just fantastic. It's fantastic without the movie. It's fantastic with the movie. The movie is fantastic with the score that he has created. It's amazing. And I want to say, I'll just say it right now. I think his Dune Part 1 and Part 2 music is some of the best movie music of all time.
It's very good.
I'm just going to put it up there.
And it goes straight up with, I mean, it goes straight with what the movie is and is about. And the movie wouldn't be what it is without the music.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd say that's something else, though, what you just said. All across the board, this movie experience, both of these movies, but especially, I think, Part 2, everything just works together. It's not like, oh, great performances, but it fell over here. Oh, great music, but it all works together as this cohesive whole that creates an almost, I don't want to oversell it, but I'm going to, an almost perfect movie experience.
Yep.
It's really, really close.
I mean, I love the quotes that they're put on the TV promos of the critics reviews. Have you seen those?
Some of them, yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, it's like a perfect film. And the another one's like, now I know what it was like to see Star Wars for the first time in theaters. You know, so stuff like that. It's like, wow, high praise.
I mean, it's, you can kind of chart, especially film of this sort. You can kind of go along. You've got your Star Wars experience where it was just so different than anything that had happened on the screen. It's pulpy. It's not the most, you know, deep movie of all time. It wasn't the deepest movie of that year, but it just pulled people in and it made tons of money and it was big and juvenile, but fun and pulpy and all that stuff. And then you have, I wouldn't say that necessarily the next thing that's like that, but close to the next thing would be Jurassic Park, mm-hmm. where it's another one where it just changed what people realized movies could do. And the same thing with Avatar, that first Avatar. Now, you know, if Steve is ever going to listen to this episode, he's going to shake his fist at the screen or whatever to say, wait a minute. And I retract a little bit of what I would have said in that was Steve and I before Strangers and Aliens. When we did our episode about that. Yeah. We got into a little bit of an argument. It was a good natured argument, but a little bit of argument about just, it wasn't that great, but the experience was something that was just, you had to go to the theater to see that and to experience that. And I would say the same thing here. Yeah. And it's not hyperbole to say this is what it was like to see Star Wars in the theater. I will say there's talk about how, you know, the people are calling it, it's The Empire Strikes Back, right? Uh-huh. They say it's The Empire Strikes Back. And I'd say, no, it's not. But I think we have to talk about spoilers to talk about why.
Okay. Yeah, but my theater experience was good. I went with my wife. We went and saw it in the Regal Cinemas, and I was very pleasantly surprised that they had cranked up the sound for this, because it wasn't even in the RPX theater. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's that's the theater where they actually do vibrate the seats at certain
points. Oh. I don't ever want to do that.
it's fun. I like it when they do that. But it's I mean, when I went and saw the first one, it was in the Alamo Draft House. And they crank the sound anyway, because they're just like movie, like this is for movie people. Don't bring mm-hmm. your kids into this theater, you know, like that sort of thing. But with this,
and don't talk, right?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. But with this, it was they did it too, and I was like, yes, this is great. That was the only concern I had. Otherwise, it was a great theater experience. No weird stuff happened with people. You know, it was just fun and fine.
So. It was just, I went and saw the movie. The movie was good. Yes. And I left the movie.
That's right.
Okay. So fairly similar experiences then. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just jump into the rating. Out of 5 sandworms, Evan, how many sandworms out of 5 would you give to this movie?
4.5. And the only reason I give it 4.5 is probably because Superman's not in this movie. Otherwise, it'd be a 5.
I think if Superman was in this movie, I think it would dip down to a 2, maybe a 1. I don't think it would fit. I don't think it would work. That's just me.
It's like just your opinion, man.
He starts grabbing the worms by the tail and pulling them out of the desert.
All right. What about you? Yeah.
Well, I went back and forth quite a bit, and it was going back and forth over half of a sandworm or half of a star. I was flirting with a 5-star rating for this, which I haven't given to too many movies at all.
Just remember, you gave a 5-star rating to Kong Skull Island.
No, I did not. Did I?
Yes, you did. is this better than Kong Skull Island?
Then? I might need to redact that Kong Skull Island 5-star.
You were really happy leaving the theater.
Hey, it was a fun movie. All right. Yeah. It was a fun movie. I might need to go and review my Letterboxd and make some attendance. So there's two things that really, I can't decide if it pushes it off of 5 stars for me, and to 4.5 realm. And one is what the ultimate statement in some ways that, I've heard his name, but it's Denny
Villa. I can't. Yeah. It's something.
I really apologize. French
or something. Yeah.
He's Canadian.
He is.
Yeah.
So French.
Anyway, what I feel like he was trying to portray about religion, which in some ways is actually good, what he's saying, if and when it's true, but then the changes he made to Chani because of what he wanted to say and make a stronger statement about religion.
Okay.
And so those two things together are what kind of made me kind of teeter between, but I think I am going to stick with a 5 just because, I mean, it just, the script isn't perfect. The dialogue is not 100% like, oh, this is quotable. There's some quotable stuff, but the script fits perfectly with what the movie needs to be. And the thematic stuff that's trying to say about religion, especially blind adherence to religion and interpretation and different people's interpretation of the same things is interesting. And you have just the scope of things. I mean, this movie, it does take you to another world. It transports you and it moves along then as you're moving from place to place and scene to scene. It's not jarring when they move from one place to another. It's not, nothing feels like it's dragging. I don't think I ever felt bored. I was tired. I had been up, you know, since early Sunday morning, but it kept me going. I do want to see it again in the theater. I don't know if I'm going to actually get a chance to do that, but I'd like to.
If it's still in theaters in April, let's go see it.
Which it could be. It genuinely could be. It does what cinema is supposed to do. It transports you. It gives you a story and gives you something to think about. And
I said this about the first one, like it just feel the way it's done. It just feels like it's absolutely real. You know, mm-hmm. like it doesn't feel fake or false at all.
No, there's one stylistic point where when it shifts from one world to another, where I'm just kind of thinking, oh, I don't know. But then they kind of give a reason for it and I'm, oh, okay. But even then it wasn't enough for me to say, oh, bad form, Mr. Director. The characters, they embody their parts and there's menace and there's joy and there's love and there's hate. And so just the human emotional experience. Anything you want to touch on before we move on to the spoilers then, I guess?
I just want to reiterate, if you get a chance, see this thing in the theater.
Who do you recommend this movie to?
I mean, like you said, I think the same people who would have enjoyed Star Wars or Jurassic Park. I mean, you don't have to, this isn't a franchise film necessarily. You don't have to be into the world of the characters. Just go watch it, you know? And I don't think it really had any objectionable material in it. So if you like just action, I mean, obviously there's thematic stuff.
Right.
And there's some violence. But.
Yeah, I would say the objectionable stuff happens off screen in a way that is still meant to disturb you. And if you kind of, if you understand what's going on, it should disturb you, but it's not totally visible. And even then it's more violence related, and it's related to bad people who are awful, terrible, no good, very bad people who do awful, no good, very bad things to other people. One more question for you, Evan. I can't remember this answer from before, but have you seen the other Dune movies?
No. And okay, I don't want to until I've seen all of these ones.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Because you have the David Lynch film from 84 that is its own thing. It just, they meant it to be a trilogy, but it didn't get any further than just the first movie. And then they had the Sci-Fi Channel TV movies.
Oh.
And that's much more true to the book. I would say even than this, maybe. Okay. But I mean, it feels like I think it's from around 2001, 2002. And it feels like watching Farscape or Deep Space Nine,
sure,
or Babylon 5. And so it works, you know, but it doesn't reach the cinematic heights of this big budget blockbuster film that has a visionary director who is actually allowed to just do his vision.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, I'm going to play the spoiler organ now.
Spoilers. Spoilers. Spoilers.
Oh. All right, Evan. It's all game. Like, we can talk about anything we want to.
Lead on, sir, because there's so much to talk about. So you steer the ship.
Oof. We'll talk about the change. We'll talk about the Chani change.
Okay, because I know nothing about the character, so I just took this movie as canon.
Well, and that's the thing. It works as a standalone. If there was no book, I wouldn't even have a reason to complain about it, because it's the character. It's the way that they set up the character from the beginning. It is a logical character arc for her to follow. It's just not the character arc that the book takes her on. Okay. In the book, she goes along with the marriage at the end. So it's a political thing, and it's meant to be a kind of mirror image of Paul's mother and father. And so Paul's father, the Duke, has a concubine that he is dedicated to and can't marry for various reasons, but they might as well be married. They have a child together. They support each other. He respects her. He allows her to make decisions and choices that affect the house. She, for all intents and purposes, is his wife, even though it's not a legal marriage.
Right.
And so that's kind of what they then set up. The one difference being that Paul says, I'm going to marry the princess to make this political alliance with the Imperial House. And Chani is his concubine wife, and for all intents and purposes is his wife.
Right.
And the Emperor's daughter, then she still has a very important, vital place in the universe of Dune, as you see in this, where she is kind of the record keeper of history.
Right.
And actually in the book, there's these historical snippets at the beginning of the chapters, and a lot of them are written by her. And so that's what she's doing in the movie here, when she's sitting down and, you know, charting the course of history about her father and things like that. And so that's what it was supposed to be.
Okay.
And so I'm stepping into this movie thinking this is a love story that is going to endure to the end of the credits.
Right.
But instead we get this Empire Strikes Back cliffhanger ending where she looks intently at the screen.
She's mad.
And the music. Yeah. The music swells. Because, and that's another, a big change then is she's not a true believer.
Right.
And not that she necessarily is in the book, but in the book, she's going along with things in the same way that Paul is kind of going along with things and recognizing, okay, so these prophecies were planted by the Bene Gesserit. We're going to use that. The Bene Gesserit were planning to use it to their own ends, but guess what? I'm here and I kind of fit the prophecy. And so I get to use it for my own ends. And she was a part of that then. Okay. And so when Paul has children, it's with Chani. And I don't know where it's going to go then, because now that movie, the next movie, Children of Dune, mm-hmm. or Dune Messiah, rather, it can go in so many different directions now because of just this little change with Chani. I doubt it will veer too far off the path, but we'll see.
Okay.
We'll see. But anyway, it kind of made it teeter for me a little bit, because the other thing you can see that he's doing as a screenwriter and as a director is he is aiming the ship in this direction of religious belief is, if not bad, not something to aspire to. And so you have the chief character, I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But he's talking about the prophecy and he's a true believer. And you have the North and the South kind of a divide. That's not in the book. Where the Northern people are far more likely to not take everything as set in stone as far as the religious beliefs. And the Southern people, they're the Hicks. They're the, you know, I would be careful how I say this, but you know, they're the unintelligent ones because they're the ones who believe in all that claptrap.
Right. Well, and so I was getting mixed messages, and maybe it's just because I don't understand what's laid out in the book, but it seems that to me as a layman, just watching the movie, it seems that the prophecies are true and it's somehow the spice actually does give you a way to see into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So therefore, like, okay, so this is the future. He's seen it, or at least a possible one. Right. And that's what the prophecies are based on and all the stuff is coming true. So why and so for me, I'm like, Chani, you're just not believing just because you just don't want to.
What? No, Chani is not believing because Denny doesn't want her to.
Because who?
The director.
Oh, yeah.
No, it comes back to, because I was thinking about this, there's a little bit of a parallel here where we've had this conversation before about the people who can't write Superman a lot of times can't write about Superman because they don't believe in the heroic ideals that Superman stands for. Yeah. And so they either have to deconstruct him or they get him wrong. And I feel like that's what we've got here with Den. I really, really should have practiced saying his name, but with the director, I feel like he does not want to say there's a possibility that religious adherence could be a good thing. And because what Paul sees is a possible future, and he's trying to avoid that future. Meanwhile, the Bene Gesserit have also seen these futures, and they're trying to guide the future. And that's the whole thing with Paul. Paul should not have been born because his mother, Jessica, was meant to have a daughter. And that's what they were pushing for, was to have that daughter. And then you have, the prophecy that they're trying to do to keep them in power. And Paul's able to use that to his advantage. It's one of those things where, they're kind of looking into the future, kind of seeing this future that they can try and shape into, but then they're planting seeds of those prophecies, and actually they are guiding the belief system of the Freeman. And so it's kind of cool. It's fascinating world building that Frank Herbert did. And I just feel like Denis Villeneuve, however you say his name, I just feel like he just doesn't want to take that step that allows us to embrace the reality.
Well, of I don't think he's got a choice with even just with what is presented to us on the screen, because I mean that one part where Paul just walks into the ceremony and just starts calling people out, and he knows all their deepest, darkest secrets. No, and yeah. It's like, well, okay, obviously he knows this stuff. Like, so, and he's fulfilling all the prerequisites. So he is the guy. So why are we doubting this? Why are we? I mean, I can understand why Chani's kind of mad, because she didn't want him to be the savior guy, but like, it's all just happening, you know, like it's yeah. All the stuff is true. Yeah.
So I feel like it's trying to walk a line that it can't walk because of what's set up, even in its own internal canon, mm-hmm. and definitely in the book canon. I mean, the interesting thing about both the movie and the book, and this is kind of a thematic thing as well, is Frank Herbert was writing a Messiah story, but he doesn't want you cheering for the Messiah. The whole idea behind this, the idea of the Messiah is a bad thing for him. And it comes to, you know, trusting in the authorities too much. You don't want to trust the authority too much. And so Paul may have the best of intentions, but it doesn't mean that him stepping up and becoming this great leader is going to end well. And Frank Herbert I would say he was suspicious of the government for sure. And suspicious of any one person who's able to make decisions for everybody. And so that makes it a really interesting just direction to go in and Paul's fighting against it the whole yeah. time. He doesn't want to be that guy, but then he sees what they do. And it's like, well, okay, so I can fight against this and maybe not become that guy. But if I do that, people are going to die. And if I don't do it, people are going to die. And so which direction do you want to take? If the end result is the same, you want to do what's right. You know, if it's like you can choose to do evil or choose to do good, and no matter which way you go, the end result is going to be the same. That's an interesting choice. Yeah. You could choose the evil side because it's just like, yeah, doesn't matter. Or you could choose the good side because, well, I'm going to do the right thing, even though there's going to be some pretty heavy consequences behind it. And yeah, there's some interesting food for thought there. But the other thing, Evan, I wouldn't necessarily try and go too deep with this movie, because I feel like in the best way possible, this is meant to be a surface level movie.
Okay.
It's meant to take you on a journey to another place, to another realm, and to make you feel things, feel disgust, and feel hope, and feel excitement, and feel your chest cavity shaking. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just impressed with how deep the world building is, and I'm assuming that's from the book. Because, yeah.
Yeah, but even then they do their own things with it.
Yeah.
And they make changes. And, okay, what did you think? Because I keep going back and forth about this. The planet where Baron Harkonnen has the arena. Mm-hmm. And it's black and white when you're out in the
lake. Right, because it's a black sun.
Yeah, you close the shades and you're back in color again. But once the black sun is shining, what'd you think about that? I just keep going back and forth. Like, was that cool or was it cheap?
I mean,
like, was it just a cheap trick to be able to film in black and white?
No, I didn't think it was that. I thought it was a choice and they stuck with it. I was like, as long as they stick with the rule. Well, no, it's like, because, you know, sometimes you do this. It reminds me of Transformers The Last Night, where we're watching the movie and like the aspect ratio is changing depending on what scene you're in or what shot you're in. And it's like, pick one and stick with it. And so like they made their rules for how this effect works, you know, and then they stuck with it. And so I was like, cool, you know.
I just kept going back and forth because it was so different. Yeah. And that actually might be the reason why it was good, mm-hmm. right? But at the same time, I just kept going back and forth. Did I like that or not? Ultimately, I think I did. Again, this scene it's raw and it's violent. It's not choreographed, you know, mm-hmm. it's just brutal. And then you have those weird guys in the background with the wings on their head.
Yeah. Well, it's the same like, it's the, like okay. The six-legged spider person from the first one. And it's like, what is that? Why is it there? We don't know.
Well, you kind of get an idea, but this is the world building I'm talking mm-hmm. about. You don't know why they're there, but everything they do is internally consistent. Yeah. Like they're there. And then, your bad guy starts losing the upper hand. And so they step in. They're going to make sure that the gladiator that he's fighting against isn't going to prevail. And he's, no, go yeah. away. Let me have this. And it's just this really kind of weird looking thing that's meant to be, it just gives you a sense of dread.
Yeah.
If you look too long mm-hmm. at it, and, you know, cause they're lanky, they have very long limbs, and yeah, it's just this world building thing where you're like, okay, I don't know anything else about them, but the people making the story did.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I don't remember that from the book at all. So I don't know if it's from the book, not from the book, but there's mountains of concept art for this yeah. movie that they, how much fun would that be? Create that universe.
Let's do it ourselves.
What else stuck out to you?
Oh man. Well, besides the really interesting, you know, duality of these Messiah prophecies, which I thought was really interesting. I mean, the way that they've constructed the technology is just, it's so unique to what, you know, other franchises do. There wasn't a single blue sky beam in this movie, and it was fantastic. But there's
at first I didn't understand what you said, but blue sky beam.
Yes.
I was gonna say, I think that there was some blue skies in some of the flashbacks. Okay, yeah, yeah. Giant sky beams.
Yes.
Gotcha.
None of those.
Yep.
But they had like the Emperor soldiers at the beginning who are just like floating up the side of this mountain thing. And the little,
that was rad.
Yeah. And the little tiny,
that was so rad.
The little tiny laser beam that just looks like a laser pointer, but it destroys everything it touches. Super cool, you know, and the shields, you know, that only let slow things in. Just so interesting the way that all of that stood out, and I loved that. And here's another thematic interesting thing in here that I thought was very interesting, and I don't I don't know if this is a progressive director, if he's understanding this, but like you're having the quote unquote fetus have a mind and heart and soul.
Yeah.
And talk to people.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Now obviously there's magic spice stuff.
Sure. And
worm pee involved, but that is a book thing. And that's something else. They did some things a little bit different from the book with mm-hmm. that. But it worked. And that was a change I did not have a problem with. Yeah. You know, you do get to see his sister. That was, what was her name?
I don't know.
Anna Taylor
Anna Taylor-Joy.
Yeah, Anna Taylor-Joy. That vision that he had of Anna Taylor-Joy is meant to be his sister,
right?
Who is a pretty powerful force also in this world. And yeah. But it is kind of interesting too, because you're definitely, the movie universe is telling us they're hearing from her.
Right.
They definitely are. But then you see it and you're kind of seeing it from an outside perspective where she's just walking along. What did you say?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, anyone else is watching this? Is that lady, is she playing with a full deck or not?
Yeah, what
is she one fry short of a happy meal?
my wife liked the where they all ride on the worm together like a bus. Like after we saw how hard it is to get on those things, she's like, how do the rest of these people get on? Like, did they stop the worm?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think once that first person gets on the worm, they get control of it, and then they're able to like load it up. I think you're still running to get on. You know, it's not just it doesn't just stop and you get on like it's the cat bus on Totoro. Yeah.
Well, because or whatever. I saw these things kind of like sharks where they can't actually stop moving, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think you can slow them down. I don't think they like it, but I think you can. Yeah. And that is something. I mean, they do travel on it, but I don't remember from the book any time where they're like loading it up with furniture.
Yeah.
So that they can, it's like their camper that they're just taking. I do love that whole idea of just, you know, using those hooks, pulling back the scale skin. You know, it reminds me, did you ever play Shadow of the Colossus?
You let me borrow it, and I played it for like a half an hour and I didn't like it. So
I will still be your friend. I am not exaggerating when I say that is one of my top five video games of all time. Unfortunately, like the other four in my top five video games of all time are, you know, prefixed with 2600. So like it's, so maybe it's not saying much about my taste, but that game, man, but it's that idea of, you know, you make things uncomfortable for the creature to control the creature just enough that it doesn't like rebel completely against you. You just want the creature you want to guide the creature with discomfort. Mm-hmm. And when you think about it then too, like just that whole like environmentalist idea of, you know, a holistic ecosystem, mm-hmm. you know, it's really unfortunate for the worms that they get used like that. But then at the same time, they also just completely obliterate anything in and everything that comes on the sand. And I'll also say that scene where he actually calls the worm and rides the worm was exciting and thrilling, but also a little bit lackluster.
Oh, I disagreed. I was like, it's like we're on the worm. Like, this is how it would actually be.
Actually, not when Paul did it, when I really should have looked up the name because I can't remember the name of the chief guy, but when he's just riding by on the worm and Paul's like, hey, he's like, hey, I said, how do they even hear each other? I mean, we've experienced the sound of this.
Well, I mean,
that felt like
he can do the voice thing.
I don't know if that's how the voice thing works, but that voice thing is cool, yeah. Man. That's always been something that I just found so fascinating and cool. Yeah. I remember the first time I read the book, I read it in college. We were on a summer tour with our singing group, and I read it on the van ride as we were just traveling around the United States. And I read that and a couple other things that really was perfect. I caught it at the perfect time and it just yeah, fed that sense of wonder that I was looking for. And yeah, that the voice just,
yeah,
that's cool. It's cool.
I really like seeing the emperor and the princess. I thought that just added depth to the world. I thought it was cool.
Christopher Walken, yeah, man.
He was
great.
Yeah, he was
though.
Subdued. Yeah, he mm-hmm. he did a good job.
And was on set maybe twice, yeah. maybe yep. 2 days. I expected to see more of him. I don't remember if I actually saw anywhere that he had been cast. And so I was watching YouTube and a Dune trailer came up. And I was like, is that Christopher Walken that I just saw there? And then he's in the movie. And yeah, and his daughter too. So was it Florence?
I don't know. She's Black Widow's sister.
It's yeah. Black Widow. Yeah. Yeah. Again, she was very subdued. There's a lot of subdued performances in this.
Yeah, but I thought
I
liked her. So I'm like, finally an actual good guy. Like if there's one unambiguous uh-huh. good guy, it's her.
Yeah. Or close enough to it, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because that's one thing. The balance of the force it's not very yeah. balanced here. Like you got some really bad people doing really lots and lots of really bad people doing really bad things. And then you have some kind of good people.
Yeah, I did not see that twist coming where he's half Harkonnen or whatever. Yeah. That was pretty cool. Interesting.
Which that could be another reason to compare this to Empire Strikes Back. Here's the thing, as far as comparing this to Empire Strikes Back, the impact of the Empire Strikes Back, I feel, is stronger.
Oh, for sure.
Because of
culturally, for sure.
But yeah. But this is a better movie. Like I say that with I've got the poster, you know, on my wall, but this is a better movie than The Empire Strikes Back for sure. Actually, I've got two. You can't really see it here, but that's a second Empire Strikes Back poster up there. But I feel like this does not have the cultural impact. I feel like it doesn't have the plot twist shock yeah. impact of The Empire Strikes Back. And I also feel like it doesn't have the cliffhanger impact of Empire Strikes Back. They could stop right here and it's not satisfying because I mean it ends with Chani just yeah. being angry, you know, and you want her to somehow, whether it's to come back with Paul and they reignite their relationship or to not, you know, but you want to know where it's going to go. But yeah, the cliffhanger is not nearly as strong. And so to say this is The Empire Strikes Back, it both diminishes this movie and elevates it to a place where it shouldn't be elevated to.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because it's not the same level of cliffhanger, not the same level of shock, but at the same time, it is a much better film. Just objectively speaking, a much better film.
I agree.
Yeah. So I can understand the comparison. I just don't agree with it.
That reminds me of the line from the Solo Star Wars movie where Lando's like, I don't like it. I don't agree with it, but I respect it. I love that.
Yeah. I think that about sums it up. I think so. I think so.
All right. Anything else for you?
So, yeah, I mean, without any notes, we've talked about some theme stuff. We've talked about the characters a little bit. The plot, again, going back to just what you're talking about with some of the twists and turns and stuff. I, even knowing what I knew about the books and having seen the 1984 version multiple times, probably more than I should admit, and having seen the miniseries and having recently reread the book, I didn't care. I was swept along with the story. And then you talk about style.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a combination of all four of those things, probably with emphasis on style, cinematography, music, all that stuff. But then there's just that fifth factor, the enjoyment factor. And man, did I enjoy myself at this movie. And there's a part of me that's a little bit sad that because Dune Part 1 and Part 2 are so long, I'm probably never going to have an opportunity to sit down and just watch them both together unless I get COVID again.
You always say stuff like that. I'm never going to do this again. I'm never going to have time to do this again. I mean, retirement's
coming. No. I'm not that close.
But at some point.
No. What I'm saying is I'm going to watch these again. I'm probably going to end up in, you know, when it hits HBO Max, I'm probably going to take a week where I'm going to be watching through these two movies. I'll experience them again, but I don't see an opportunity to sit down with 7 hours or 6 hours or whatever it might be to be able to watch them back to back. Like when I went, I mean, this is pre-children, right? Well, I guess I had a couple kids, but they were babies.
There was only a couple.
And it was okay. But when I went to that full day showing of Lord of the Rings, and got to see Fellowship, Two Towers, and Return of the King, it was the extended edition of the first two. That kind of thing, I don't see having the opportunity to do that anytime until maybe I retire. But yeah, because I would love to do that. I just don't see that happening. But at the same time, I'll be watching these again for sure. Like it was an experience, man. It was an experience. It's the same with Rebel Moon. I want to watch that again, but it's not going to be in one sitting.
Well, I don't want to watch the non-Snyder cut again.
Well,
I'm excited to watch both Snyder cuts of the both parts back to back.
It'll be interesting to see if
they're releasing them at the same time.
Well, I feel like I'm going to need to watch the first one non-Snyder cut again before I watch the second one non-Snyder cut. And then, but I don't know, do you know release dates? Do they have release dates?
They have announced them, I believe, but I don't know them off the top of my head.
See if we can find that, but I'm reading the book right now, and if that's any indication of what the Snyder cut is going to feel like, it's going to be rough. It's going to be raw. It's going to be brutal. And there is at least one, I'm about a third of the way through the book, maybe not even that much. There's one really explicit scene in there that I feel like, okay, I hope this is the author throwing this in, because I do not want to see this. But
well, did Zack Snyder make this whole thing up?
It's all him. Yep.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. No, he created it to be a Star Wars movie. Right. Seven Samurai in the Star Wars universe. And they said, no, we don't want an R-rated Star Wars. Besides, we're making some changes to our direction here. And yeah, so we're getting his version of what Star Wars would be. Okay, this is Wikipedia about Rebel Moon. Following a limited theatrical release on December 15th, 2023, Rebel Moon was released by Netflix on December 22nd. It received generally negative reviews from critics. An R-rated extended cut is set for release in mid-2024, and a sequel, Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver, is scheduled for release on April 19th, 2024.
Okay.
So no specific date.
So
based on,
is it only two parts?
Yeah. So the idea is two parts for this story, but the universe could expand to be something more.
All right.
And so they're talking about comics. They're talking about book tie-ins. They're talking about, could there be an animated thing? Will there be another movie? It all depends on how well things go for Netflix and how how happy and pleased they are with the results of this, but
got it.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm a little bit nervous about what the R-rated cut is gonna include. So, okay. But I'm reading the book because of the similarities to just this Dune idea, you know, where even though, okay, so Dune part one, Dune part two, they're taking one book, cutting it in half and giving you a complete story. But Rebel Moon was always intended to be, I think, two movies. I might be wrong that at first it might've been intended to be a 5-hour thing. I don't know, but the idea of splitting it and Netflix saying we want a PG-13 version and we should just use that as part of the promotion to get the R-rated thing. But it's just interesting to me to see like these visionary directors' visions of just cool sci-fi, you know, and yeah. Dune is a franchise. Yes, kind of, but most of the world doesn't care about the franchise. They just care about what these two movies. Rebel Moon is a whole new franchise that they're building from the ground up that definitely has Star Wars influence behind it. Dune influenced Star Wars. In fact, some people would say that George Lucas ripped off Dune, and you know, that like the voice and some of that stuff and the spice kind of, you know, is that where George Lucas was starting from with the Force? You got a desert planet. You've got
lots of sand.
Yeah.
You got a Sarlacc pit.
Yep. There's similarities there. And I wanted to read the book to see, like, does it feel like they're trying to be Dune with Rebel Moon? So all told, I enjoyed this experience.
Absolutely.
And
I really want there to be another one.
He's writing it.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about this lately. We need to do an episode where if we had billions of dollars, what things would we make sure get sequels that don't have them that need them?
Oh.
Because this would be one of them. This would be one of them if it didn't get a sequel. But they'd have to make the Alita Battle Angel sequel first.
I don't see this not getting a sequel.
Yeah.
It's getting all of the buzz. It's getting all of the money. It's going to happen. The question is, how long is it going to take us to get there?
Yeah. Hopefully they just double down and be like, okay, we're filming the next one back to back, you know, so we can get annual releases.
Yeah. Now they were talking about actually doing a TV series as well on Max. Really? Yeah. Yeah. It'd be about the Bene Gesserits.
Max will make a TV series about anything.
Well, until the people in charge say, no, we're just going to not do that and pull it. And
well, the people in charge are making the Peacemaker series and the Penguin series. And yeah, come on. There's better stuff.
It's Max is weird. That's all I have to say. It's weird. You've got these classic movies going in, going out and everything, but and then you have Peacemaker, Penguin,
Studio Ghibli.
Yeah,
all the Studio Ghibli movies.
It's just a really odd mix of stuff. Made even more odd that, you know, it's not like Netflix, where Netflix says, oh, we're making things because we had success, so now we're going to make things. But Max is like, they're owned by Warner Brothers. Like, how?
Yeah.
And it's the same with Disney Plus, too. I really have a problem with Disney Plus not putting out as much stuff as they can from the vault.
Yeah.
Like there's so much old stuff that, yeah, maybe not everyone cares about that. Maybe most people don't care about it, but why isn't it just there?
Exactly.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't get it. Meanwhile, all that Max
I don't stuff like it.
Is on Tubi.
I don't agree with it. And I don't respect it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is what it is. I'm not the decision maker. I can barely take care of what budget I do have.
Nice. So, same.
Yeah. All right. Final word. Final words.
Final words. I never have anything good to say for final words.
And you're not where you can just grab a book and point at a page.
I know.
Right? Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I guess I'm going to say the spice must flow or something.
I like the addition to that quote. I think that's actually more effective. The spice must flow or something.
Yes.
And right. Then, yeah, that just kind of covers it all.
Yeah.
So I want to say thank you for spending time with us, everyone. Thank you. Oh, the Madam Web connection. I forgot to mention that.
Oh, okay.
I paid full price to go see Madam Web. And I got points because of that. And Dune cost me $3.
Wow.
$3. And so in my mind, they flip-flopped. And Madam Web actually only cost $3. And I paid full price for Dune. And it made my heart feel a little better.
That's good.
But then I could also look at it like, wow, that's $1 an hour. Like that's that's worth it. That's worth it. So, hey, everyone, thank you so much for spending time with us. If you are still with us past that spoiler organ, and, you know, check us out on Facebook. We really appreciate it if you join us there. You can also check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/strangersandaliens. And if you are watching this on YouTube, check out our website, strangersandaliens.com. We have over 400 episodes, something for anyone and everyone.
And if you're watching this on YouTube, I do have corporeal form. You just can't see it right now.
Yeah, but it's Black Blossom. You're representing.
Yeah, there you go.
Representing Black Blossom. Black Blossom.
Black Blossom.
All right. So until next time, everyone, Godspeed.
All right.
And depending on how lazy I feel, you might get the real thing or you might get this. Spoiler. Spoiler. Spoilers.
That was magical.
Yeah. I told you, reasonable facsimile.